Welcome to this IFRS Foundation podcast, which will focus on the May meeting of the International Accounting Standards Board. The meeting took place in London on the 22nd and 23rd of May 2018. My name is Matt Tilling and I am the Director of Education here at the Foundation. Today I am joined by the Chair of the Board, Hans Hugewurst, and Vice Chair Sue Lloyd to talk through the latest meeting and other developments. Hans, the main focus of the Board's discussion this month was aspects of the work on better communication and financial reporting. At the meeting last month in April, the Board decided that all companies shall identify a measure or measures of profit or comprehensive income that in the view of management communicates the financial performance of the company to investors and other users of financial statements. It also decided that if this measure is not a subtotal or total already required in IFRS standards, it classifies as a management performance measure and specific disclosure requirements would apply. Since the April meeting, some more work has been done into developing this concept.
Yes, so this is important work, part of what we call the primary financial statements project. And part of that project is that we feel the need for the creation of more line items and more subtotals to create a better and more comparable structure in the income statement. That is something that both companies and especially investors have been asking for. Now, there's indeed for these management performance measures, there's a requirement to reconcile them to the nearest IFRS number, except for when the management performance measure is an existing subtotal in IFRS. What we decided to do at this meeting is to add some subtotals to the IFRS requirements, and once they are there, you don't need to reconcile them in the notes if they happen to be a management performance measure. The subtotals that we decided to add to IFRS are profit before tax, profit from continuing operations, and gross profit, which we define as revenue less cost of sales. These are very commonly used subtotals in practice at this moment. It's important to note that a company will not be required to provide these subtotals, but if they do, they won't be considered to be managed performance measures, so you don't have to reconcile them. We've also considered the question whether companies that identify more than one management performance measure should be required to disclose multiple adjusted EPS numbers. And in the end, we decided not to require disclosure of adjusted EPS to go with the management performance metrics. We thought it would be just too costly an exercise. It's a change from what we decided tentatively last month. On balance, the board decided that it was more useful to require disclosures of the effects on tax and non-controlling interests of each of the adjustments between the closest IFRS subtotal and a management metric. And we believe that that way investors can make adjustments to EPS themselves that they are interested in, and we will end up not requiring multiple EPS metrics.
There was also some discussion on aggregation and disaggregation in the financial statements, but I understand that we are likely to see more work on this from staff, so let's discuss that at a future podcast. But Hans, another part of this project that the board did look at was the classification of expenses by nature or function and how to improve information for users.
Yeah, we basically want to add some guidance as to for companies as to when to use by nature or when to use by function, which is currently more or less a free choice. The board decided to add to the requirements in IAS 1 the following factors to consider in making that decision. First of all, which method provides the best information about key components of drivers of profitability? And secondly, very importantly, which method matches most closely with how management reporting inside the company is going on. And thirdly, we ask companies to take a look at what is usual in their sector of the economy, what is peer industry practice that also gives you an indication which reporting is preferable. It was also decided that if an entity provides an analysis of expenses using a bifunction methodology, that they would also be required to provide the information by nature. But this information could be provided at an entity level, not as a breakdown of each functional line presented. So we are trying to balance what is feasible for entities, what is still cost effective, with the information needs of users.
Sue, there was also discussion about what the board will do in the future when developing disclosure requirements around standards.
Yeah, so this was continuing the discussion on the disclosure initiative, which is also part of the Better Communications project. And basically what we're talking about here is developing some guidance and a new approach to test the drafting of disclosure requirements from the board. And we're responding to feedback that we got from the recent discussion paper, where people told us that they thought that writing the disclosure requirements in a more objective-based way could lead to better disclosure, so better communication. So what the board decided at this meeting was that in the future we should test drafting all of our disclosure requirements using one or more disclosure objectives, and that these objectives should explain why the information is considered by the board to be useful to people using the financial statements, and what it is that we expect primary users of the financial statements to do with that information. So really the idea here is to develop objectives that are more specific than the ones that you sometimes see today in our disclosure requirements, where we talk about sort of generally understanding the effects on future cash flows, the timing, amount and uncertainty, but really trying to develop disclosure objectives that give better context for preparers to work out from a materiality perspective what information really needs to be disclosed, and also to give a better basis for audit and enforcement of those objectives. The board also decided that going forward, using these disclosure objectives, we'd link all of the disclosure requirements explicitly to those objectives, and to give a clear link between each of the items and that disclosure objectives, to try again to improve the way it's drafted and therefore hopefully the way our requirements get applied.
So the board also continued its discussions on business combinations under common control.
That's right. So we continued discussing the approaches that the staff are developing for the subset of transactions that we were talking about in the April podcast. So just to briefly recap, it's transactions between entities that are under common control, where one company effectively buys a business from a sister company and the entity making the purchase has got a non-controlling interest. So at this meeting, the staff gave us another presentation that was really designed to get some feedback from the board to help the staff develop some more specific ideas. And the focus again is really on the extent to which, if we use IFRS 3 as the starting point for the accounting, what parameters or constraints might we need to put around the determination of goodwill because of the common control environment. And it's sort of very specific, and people who are interested, I'd really recommend they look at the slide deck that the staff used to walk the board through the different ideas there.
Hans, turning to the goodwill and impairment project, we left it last month with the staff coming back with some proposals on next steps.
Yes, and I'm afraid that the staff will have to continue coming back with some proposals, but because at this meeting we basically came to the conclusion that on the one hand, we have not really been successful in achieving the outcome of the PIR, which was people thought it impairment was too costly. Could we make it less costly? And secondly, it was felt that the impairment was not always effective in bringing down goodwill when necessary in a timely fashion. And could we do things to improve the effectiveness of impairment? And what we have not really been identified to do these two things in a meaningful way, and they are also a bit contradictory, because if you want to make impairment more effective, it easily becomes a more costly procedure. But we also, in our work, especially in our work on the updated headroom approach, we came to the conclusion that it's almost built in that impairment probably comes very late and not in a sufficient manner. So we probably need a bit of a fresh looking at different options, not just the updated headroom approach, which was our first thinking, but perhaps at other possibilities as well. We still have to conclude in which form, discussion paper, request for views, we don't know yet. We have asked the staff to go back and think a little bit more fundamentally about these things. So we will probably continue our discussions for a while.
Sue, we also looked at rate-regulated activities, and the board continued the discussions developing a model for accounting for these activities.
Yes, we did. So this is the accounting for companies that are subject to regulation, like utility companies. And more specifically, we're looking at situations where those companies are subject to regulatory adjustments to the future rates that they can charge their customers that are really dealing with timing differences, truing up for costs in the past, for example, that were different to what was expected. So this accounting regime applies to a very particular population of companies, quite a narrow population, but it matters a lot to them. So at this meeting, we were talking about measurement. So when companies have got the right to recover additional amounts or need to reduce the rates they charge for amounts in the future, how should they account for that? And the staff took us through an analysis that the board agreed with that supports a conclusion that we would be heading down a path of cost-based accounting. So the future amounts of the adjustments for the rates would be discounted if there's a significant financing component, but that the discount rate wouldn't be updated. So it's a bit like the amortized cost type accounting you might see for loans under IFRS 9.
Hans, next month's board meeting is going to be a little bit different in that it's going to be a joint meeting with the FASB.
Yes, in one day of our June meeting will be a joint meeting with the FASB. We have not done so in a while. I believe it's about 2 years ago, last time that we met bilaterally. This will not be a decision-making meeting. It's more educational in nature, and really the purpose is to share information on the projects that we are both interested in, and also to see have we have achieved quite a bit of convergence in the past, and of course we are very keen to keep as converged as possible, which is in the interest of investors around the world. So one of the topics that we will be discussing is goodwill and impairment, which the FASB is also thinking about, and we believe it's very important that we at least know of each other what we're doing, and that we do our best to keep as converged as possible.
Before we close off, I thought it would be worth highlighting a couple of other developments, both what's happened and what's coming up.
Well, in May we published our annual report. It's a very clear and brief document, so if people want a quick summary of developments in 2017 and our priorities for 2018, it's worth to just take a quick look at it. June is going to be a bit of a busy month. We have our meeting with the IFRS Foundation trustees next week in London, as well as our regular meetings with our user and preparer advisory forums. And then at the end of this month, I believe it's the 28th, we have our annual international conference, which will take place this year in Frankfurt. And I believe there is still a possibility for people to join.
There are certainly places available if people want to look on the web. That brings us to the end of the May podcast. Thank you, Hans, and thank you, Sue, and thank you to our listeners. Any feedback on these podcasts, please email communications@ifrs.org. The full summary of the board's discussion and decisions at the May board meeting can be found in the ISB update on the IFRS Foundation's webpage.